welcome to Hot Weekly.
Everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast from the Haunted Attraction Entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return to you once again in the great tradition of Haunt Weekly of trying to find people that are smarter than us to come on here and talk about things of great import. And luckily, that's not hard, finding people smarter than us. But that's quite an easy challenge. But this week, we are joined with a wonderful man who's been a good friend of the show for quite some time, I might add. Maximus Bryant, one of the members of the board of directors of the Ohio Haunters Association, and one of the leads of the Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention. I think I screwed that up. A first-time conference that ran this year, and we'll be having another one, ran last year, rather. And it'll be going again this year, and we're going to talk to him about the process of getting it set up. So, Maximus, are you there?
I am here. Thanks for having me on, guys.
It's a pleasure to have you, and a pleasure to finally get to talk at length about things.
Yeah, definitely. I've been listening to your show for, I think, since, I'm going to guess, episode 50-ish.
We're very sorry.
No, but it's a fantastic show. I mean, you get to, you know, episode each week and you get to, you know, talk about different topics and it's great for a good drive and all that. So I appreciate what you guys do and what you're trying to put together for the industry.
Thank you.
I enjoy them.
But this isn't about us.
This is not about us today.
No, this is about you, what you do and who you are. So who the hell are you?
Well, I am Maximus. I'm originally from Springfield, Ohio. Moved to the Cincinnati area about 4 years ago. And since then have been, I've been acting at the Dent Schoolhouse in Cincinnati as an actor. And about 2 years ago, I got involved with the Ohio Haunters Association. And through that, made my way onto the planning committee for the Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention. So yeah, that's kind of my, what I do in the haunt world.
Okay. Yeah. How long have you been doing it?
Doing haunting?
Yeah. Haunting, Halloween, love, anything like that.
Since I was born. And that's not, no, and literally because my birthday is on Halloween. So the moment.
Oh, cool. I did not know that.
Yeah, the moment I'm born, that's when I started haunting. Hmm. and I was also born at like 10:30 at night, so, you know, Halloween
night.
Perfect
Halloween time.
Was that planned by any chance? Were your parents like, come on out?
Well, yeah, they said that because I was 2 weeks late.
Oh God.
You were waiting for Halloween.
It ain't Halloween yet. I'm not ready. And I think on the day of, yes, they were trying to force me out at that point. Yeah. It had been too long. So yeah. So all of my birthday parties growing up, they were costume parties. It wasn't uncommon for me to have my birthday parties be times we went trick or treating in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, for Max's birthday, we're going trick or treating, and you wear costumes, and you know, there's cake that was sometimes a pumpkin, sometimes it was a Batman thing, but yeah.
On one hand, that's like really awesome, but on the other hand, you have to share your birthday with Halloween.
I get to share my birthday with
Halloween. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's not like Christmas where you get double gifts.
That's true. Or you get like this is your one gift for both. No, it's true.
I got gifts and candy. That's what was awesome about it.
I guess that is a good point. It is a double up there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It was great. So, but you know, so Halloween's always been a part of growing up, obviously, just by right of birth. So I would say, and when I got older and I wasn't trick or treating anymore, you know, I would go to one of those pop up Halloween stores. I remember the first one in Springfield. It wasn't a Spirit. I don't remember what it was called. but they sold Midnight Syndicate CDs.
Oh, and yes.
So I would buy the CDs, and on trick-or-treating night, I would sit on the porch, pass out candy, but I would bring one of those CD players out with the speakers and just blast some Midnight Syndicate stuff. So that was my, like, young first haunting is-ness at the beginning. Then as I got older and into college time, my neighborhood, I think we got like maybe 14, 15 trick-or-treaters a year sometimes. So my neighborhood got together and they said, look, we want to get more people here. So we're going to actually close off the streets so people can walk across the street. We're going to encourage everybody to sit on their porch, pass out candies. And if they don't want to do it, we're going to ask them permission to put volunteers on their porches so that people will come to the area and enjoy some great Halloween time. The church in the neighborhood put on some events, some games, some face painting, stuff like that. And then they asked me to put on a little yard haunt. And this was in 2012. And back then it would just, I would set out some lights and people would walk through the backyard. I had a few friend actors and it wasn't anything big, but as each year went on, it got bigger and bigger. So I did it for like 3 years. But then I had to move to Cincinnati for a job. And that's when I decided to work for a professional haunt. And that's when I found the Dent Schoolhouse. And I worked there for 4 years, but about 3 years in, I thought, I miss my home haunt. So I have been going back and doing that during the season. The owners are gracious enough to let me do it. So that's kind of my history on a haunting.
Oh, very cool.
Very cool.
I really like that neighborhood idea and building up Halloween that way.
And I love the idea of the volunteers for the houses that don't want to give out candy.
Yeah, we should have thought of that.
Yeah,
damn
we should
it.
Have thought of that.
Yeah, we get college students and they count it as a community service.
Okay.
So they,
yeah. We
they
can
come,
do
they
cruise.
Sit.
Mm-hmm. Because our cruise in for Mardi Gras,
yeah.
They have to do community service and it could be counted as that.
Yeah. That'd be nice, and I know a lot of the neighbors would appreciate the help.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it's great because you know the streets are closed off. Kids can run across the street, and at the same time, you can trick or treat, and then you can go through this yard haunt, which you know, it's a home haunt. There's no admission for it, so they get to come through, have a little, you know, it's light scare. You know, I don't want kids to completely freak out and run away. They get afraid with at the front door just because there's a entryway with music, but
yeah, I understand.
Yeah, we try to cater to a slightly older crowd at our haunt.
Yeah,
and parents still insist on bringing the young ones through, so we've learned how to tone the show down for those. But
yeah,
our target is a little bit older than those kids.
But and I've gotten to see Bernie Baxter, and I think it's fantastic. And
yes, right. I keep forgetting you went through it at HauntCon. I don't know why I keep forgetting that.
I guess I didn't make a good impression.
Well, no, I think it's that HauntCon is all just like a half-drunken blur.
Yeah.
it was
we
a great
forget
time.
Anybody.
Yeah, I'm amazed I can remember anything from HauntCon, if we're being honest.
It's not just you, it's anybody.
Yeah, that's true. Especially in that group. Holy Christ.
What a great group, though.
What a great group.
That is one of my favorite episodes of the show, is right after HauntCon. I like listening to that one.
Yeah.
But y'all party, man. Y'all party hard.
Okay, so now we've got your history.
So tell us a little bit about the Ohio Haunters Association. Let's start with the upper level.
All right.
Ohio Haunters Association was created by Jason Wilson and Katie, and the main purpose of it is to share knowledge, to promote, and to try and strengthen the Ohio community, Ohio haunting community. You know, people can go on the Facebook page, Ohio Haunters Association, request to join, and you can, you know, post if you're looking for actors, you can post props you make, whether you're an actor, owner, or aficionado. Sorry, I can't steal that. I'm sorry.
That's all right, you can borrow it for the episode. It's fine. Run with it.
But it's there to, you know, just strengthen up the Ohio haunting community through any way possible. We try to host monthly meetings. We oftentimes get a haunt to host it, and so we'll go there. Sometimes there's a speaker. Sometimes we're talking about general events. We'll also give updates on the convention, and sometimes we get a tour of the haunt that's hosting. Sometimes somebody's giving a makeup lecture. Sometimes people are talking about fire codes. So we try to, you know, educate and encourage and, you know, just uplift and have a pretty strong sense of community with the Ohio haunting, with Ohio haunts.
That's awesome.
That is great. And that's something a lot of areas don't see.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we don't have it here.
Well, we don't have it here. And I think part of that is we've just now gotten to the point where the local haunts stop seeing each other as a competition.
Yeah.
And stop having those petty bullcrap rivalries. And we're right. starting to actually get some real collaboration and cooperation and anticipation and excitation and...
Yeah.
And all that stuff. But it's actually starting to come together a little bit now. So maybe something like that could form in 2019.
Right.
But it sure as hell wasn't going to form 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it worked out pretty well. I mean, like, for example, Blood Prison up in Mansfield, they do, I mean, there's these three haunts. When you leave the haunt, they have advertising for two haunts nearby, and they do this cross promoting thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's just wonderful. And I know down in the Cincinnati area that a couple of haunts also cross promote or get in on these advertising promotions together. And I think, you know, I'm very happy to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it used to be once when we first only got into the area, when you leave one haunt, you would see banners for other haunts.
Right.
There was at least some cooperation, but for some reason that stopped not long after Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
I don't know what changed. I don't know if we missed something because we weren't really in the haunt community at that time. We were just haunt aficionados, definitely.
Yeah.
Something changed, and now it seems to be getting more collaborative, and I like that. But yeah, that's a really cool idea to get the haunts to work together like that and to produce a group that benefits everyone. And also, I think that makes haunts better and safer, too, because that's the place you get to talk about the mundane stuff like fire codes and emergency planning and, you know, that type of stuff.
And sometimes some of the best meetings are just general roundtables where the haunts talk about, like, okay, you know, it may be a haunt that doesn't necessarily pay its actors, but, you know, how do they keep the actors interested? Or, you know, if it's a volunteer haunt, you know, how do you build a sense of community at your own personal haunt? And everybody just seems to be willing to share and talk about what they do and share ideas. And I enjoyed a lot to be part of these discussions.
The internet changed a lot of that, which I think is really good, because it used to be haunts would protect their secrets. Like, how did you build that animatronic? I'm not telling you. And then sometime, like, the internet happened and, like, Garage of Evil and things like that, and suddenly you can find tutorials for this stuff. Like, you know, Crystal and I could learn how to make fairly complicated pneumatics and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, step-by-step instructions. It's like, holy God. This is like handing, you know, an 8-year-old the nuclear codes. This is probably a very bad idea.
No, it's a very good thing.
It's a good thing.
Sharing information is a good thing.
It is. It genuinely is. It's just...
Yeah.
Maybe not sharing it with me.
No. That's possible.
Just for everybody's safety. Keep it away from John.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take up welding. So what made you guys decide to do a convention specifically?
So we, as you know, Midwest Haunters Convention was in Columbus, Ohio for you know, a pretty long time. And the association got together and we paid for a table to promote the convention. I mean, not the convention, the association. We were just looking for people to be aware, like, hey, there's this group out there. We, you know, promote home haunt, professional haunts, actor resources and all that kind of stuff. And we were just, you know, letting people know about it and hopefully get more people involved on the Facebook page and more people at the meetings and such. At the end of that convention, we were told that MHC was moving to Chicago. And, you know, we were pretty disappointed just that it would you know, leave Ohio. I mean, we understood why they did it. We understood that moving to Chicago, breathing new life into the convention, getting to see new haunts, getting different vendors, maybe being a little bit more central to the Midwest area. Good move for the convention. But Jason was having dinner with Katie afterwards, and I guess their conversation went sort of like, man, you know, sucks that MHC's leaving Ohio, but you know, hopefully somebody can do something in Ohio. And Jason then at that point was like, let's do it. Let us do something.
Why not me? Why not us?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, you can either be hoping other people do it or, you know, be the change you want to see. And so he was like, let's do it. And I'm kidding you not, within 24 hours of MHC ending, there's this big group chat going on Facebook Messenger. He's messaging Ryan Greger, Kelly Greger, Nikki Spahn, Keith Newsom, me, and was like, you know what, guys, this is something we might want to do, and this is what we're thinking. And so within 24 hours, we knew who the team was, and also within 24 hours, we knew where we wanted to have it. Because Vic from Blood Prison also suggested, like, you guys might want to look into the reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio as a location. So this had a crazy sort of fast beginning where we knew what and we knew where and we knew who pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is. That's the kind of projects I like.
Yeah.
Decide to do something and get most of it done on me.
And you got three of the five W's and the H out of the way within the first 24 hours.
Yeah. Well,
the how took some time, I think.
Yeah, and the how's going to take a little time. How's always the hard question, let's be honest.
Yes, that definitely was. But I was, you know, it was just everybody was all excited. And actually, I looked back on Facebook Messenger and found that original message. After the convention was over, I sent it back. Hey, guys, you remember this? And they read it and they're like, oh, now we got to do it again. So now we got 2020 in the works, and everybody's just excited again to do it. So, but that's how it kind of came together. Jason has, I mean, he's just a big initiative taker in getting together the Ohio Haunters Association, in getting the Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention going. He's just sort of like, let's do it. And, you know, he gets a team together and then things happen.
Cool. So it was literally just that quick, though. It's like 24 hours after MHC announces its move, you guys are halfway to answering all the questions how you're doing it.
That's pretty much how it happened, where it was, we knew where, we knew who, and the how was going to come slowly. But even then, we started divvying up roles pretty quickly. Like Ryan and Kelly were to be in charge of going and looking at hotels, getting hotel rates, blocking rooms. Nikki and I were tasked with finding vendors. Now, Nikki, you met Nikki in HotCon, yeah. And she has binders of all these cards of vendors of previous MHCs and haunt cons and other conventions that she's gone to. So she had a pretty good list of people to contact. We didn't contact people at first to see if they would vend. Instead, we contacted vendors to see what it is that they look for in a vending experience. Like, what are some things they like? What makes a good vending experience for them? And we had a lot of great feedback in regards to spacing, pricing, help with loading, electricity, stuff like that. Communication was a lot of great feedback we got. So we kind of put together, okay, this is what vendors like. And then we started talking about the package that we were going to kind of put together, say, hey, you can vend at our event. This is what you get. This is what we offer. This is what we're hoping to accomplish. And Nikki and I went to work pretty quick. I will say Nikki was the big driving force, I think, behind the vendor push, because, I mean, it was really fast. I think we were not even into 2019 yet, and we had already sold out all of the vendor spaces before we even got into 2019.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And you know, doing the conference reminders, one of the things we do is we kind of track who's vending at what.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some, like Froggy's Fog, I swear to God, they just teleport from place to place. I have no idea how they do that many conferences. I would be dead if I even attempted that.
Yeah, they are pretty much all over. But that actually kind of reminds me of what Nikki and I were actually going for. We were, you know, places like Froggy's Fog, obviously, we would, you know, love to have as vendors, and we want all the well-known vendors, obviously. But I took a special interest in looking at the, like, Ohio more local vendors, like the ones who don't have the ability to pay for big convention prices, but rather give them a chance to show their stuff at a smaller, not as well-known convention, you know, a brand new one, and say, hey, you know, Ohio, we've been promoting haunts. Now we want to maybe promote some Ohio vendors. And that's, we weren't exclusive to Ohio vendors at all, but that's maybe who we targeted at first, and then we expanded.
But the amazing thing I was saying is, like, I track how, like, vendor space that's left, and most conferences have I don't think I can think of a single conference that's just, like, struggled to sell their vendor space. There's a lot of vendors in haunting.
Yeah,
you want to sell vendor space? That's you probably got some opportunities.
Even HauntCon had some extra vendor spaces.
Yeah, right up until the last minute. Yeah, right up until the last possible second. So yeah, that's amazing to be able to sell it all out that far in advance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. We were very happy. I mean, I think there came a point where we were like, okay, you know, is this still something that we can do? But then when we had such a great response from vendors, we're like, yeah, we can do this.
Oh, but now we got to get people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to be that trade show that opens up with a great vendor floor and nobody else.
Right, but that was actually the big reason behind the reformatory. You know, the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio, is where the Shawshank Redemption film was filmed at. And it itself.
I did not know that.
Yeah, go watch it again. You can, but you have to come visit. I want you guys to visit.
We're planning on it. Nice. Might have something to talk about with that after the podcast.
Awesome. So that's where it was filmed. And the place itself, it's a big historic district. There's these giant cell blocks, and the building has a lot of age and character to it. And it's so creepy in there. The building itself is a big giant draw. And having a Halloween-related event there just makes perfect sense. That's why Blood Prison, a haunted attraction, runs out of there. And it's just perfect for it. It's creepy. It's large. There's these giant windows. It's just a beautiful building, very beautiful building. I think, you know, it was very lucky that we were able actually to secure the location. And the people that work at the reformatory were fantastic. We met with them multiple times. They talked about what they needed. We talked about what we needed. They made accommodations. They worked with us. And I felt like it was really easy and a great conversation where we didn't run into many roadblocks in regards to working with the reformatory people. So, you know, there was a lot of luck with this, I think, in general, just great people overall.
Yeah, so it sounds like everything's going really smooth up to this point. What was the biggest challenge you guys had in putting it together?
Speaking before the convention actually happens, I think the biggest challenge was that those of us that were planning the thing were spread out through Ohio. I'm in the southwest corner. Ryan and Kelly are more in the central Columbus area. Jason and Katie are farther north. Keith is also in the Columbus area. Nikki was somewhere in between. So we're all like three hours apart. And so organizing who was doing what, where were we putting information and storing it, being able to meet in person, coordinating the meetings with the reformatory. Sometimes with all of us spread out, we couldn't all be together at once a bunch. And that sometimes was rough, especially when it came to the purposes of communication. So that was difficult, but also the balancing the life portion and convention, you know, people have kids or, you know, people have work and you're trying to balance all that stuff out as well. And there was probably some difficulties in that. And when somebody was looking into things and we came across some kind of issue and we were trying to fix it, and there were times when costs would accumulate. So that was also a pretty big challenge in dealing with convention planning, where it's like, oh, do we need to get lanyards? Do we need to do wristbands? How are people going to pay for things? How is the money being processed on the website? How are we coordinating the haunt tours and all that kind of stuff? So, you know, spread out people, figuring all this different stuff out, not being able to meet in person, that all plays into it.
Yeah, the money thing is always interesting to me. I've done some event planning in my previous lives, mm-hmm. and it's one of the things people don't think about. It's like, especially if you're trying to do an event on a budget,
mm-hmm.
you'll hear something like, but yeah, lanyard's only 50 cents or whatever. And be like, yeah, but we've got 400 people. You know, that's a $200 check.
Right, and you would see things like that, but then it would add up, and then you're
exactly.
Like, oh, how did that three-digit number show up out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Now, how did we spend $2,000 on the swag bags or whatever? And I mean, it's like, stuff like that happens. It's incredible because everything multiplies by the number of people you got.
Right, exactly. Those costs did surprise us at times, but the reformatory, we got into a pretty nice agreement with them to where their money would come from from the number of tickets we sold as opposed to renting the space out. So
great. Oh my God.
That saved us a ton of upfront costs.
I felt a literal chill. Hang on. I'm sorry.
I kid you not when I tell you luck had a lot to do with this. I mean, like, it was just amazing. We're a big part of the upfront costs were taken care of in that, and we were very lucky for that. Otherwise, I'm not quite sure if this would have been able to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
So, what was the biggest surprise to you about doing this? What was the biggest shock, if you will?
Shock. Do I put that in the positive or?
It could be either.
The positive spin on it.
Yeah, do the positives. We're an upbeat podcast.
The biggest shock that I had was how awesome the vendors were, and I cannot speak to this enough, because like I would make my rounds while the convention was happening. The vendors were put into the cell block, so you got to imagine, you walk into the cell block, there's all these prison cells, and there's even cells on the floor, and there's these Halloween vendors in front of it. So there's this interesting atmosphere, and I'm walking around and I'm checking on people, and the vendors are just nice as can be. They're happy to be there. They were just excited. I mean, we weren't even like 2 hours into opening up Saturday, and a bunch of vendors are telling me that they want to be coming back next year. I mean, the amount of positive feedback that you got from the vendors was just fantastic. In addition, there were several vendors that gave feedback, but you know, they weren't a-holes about it. They were like, guys, this is fantastic. Here's maybe some suggestions I have. And it would be yada, yada, yada. And, you know, we took all of it down. We compiled a list after the convention. We actually met and talked about a lot of the things that could have been better and such. But the vendors were just wonderful people. The volunteers also were fantastic. I mean, there was a crew of Keith Newsom's people from the Trail of Tormented Terror. They showed up and they were helping load vendors in, and you know, they were just lifting up these things, carrying them down, setting them up. I mean, they were just ready to go. People who came to work, they worked. We are beyond thankful for the volunteers. They were just wonderful. As far as the convention went, I was also surprised at how far some people traveled to come to it. I mean, you know, Mike Ross from Iowa, he drove from Iowa. We had, you know, Nate from Nashville. He came, just to name a couple of friends, obviously, but they weren't the only ones that came from pretty far distances. We also had vendors out of California that came. So people traveled for this, and that was, you know, that was very humbling to see as well. So I was surprised at this. You know, there was a lot of, you know, people could have been upset about this or that. People could have complained a bunch about this or that. But, you know, the vendors, I think, were just wonderful people, and the volunteers worked, and people coming and traveling. And I thought the turnout was pretty surprising. And the number of tickets we sold at the door was also pretty surprising.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. A lot of door sales.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think of that. I wouldn't think of that.
No.
I didn't either. We were really hoping for a lot of pre-door sales.
Well, yeah.
But then the number of people that were showing up the day of, you know, we're carrying around radios, and they're up there just working the whole time, writing up new badges and giving it to people, and running the cash register / the pads for credit cards and whatnot. They were busy at the door. I think that was a very happy surprise, but it was kind of hard to get an indication that that was going to happen.
Yeah. So I was just thinking, if you have it at the reformatory again, it would be kind of cool to do special badges if you order your tickets early that are prison numbers with your name underneath.
Well, you know, people, this was actually an interesting bit of feedback we got. What we did was people, if they bought a ticket beforehand, we printed out a badge for them. It had a lanyard, it went into a plastic sleeve, it had their name on it, and it also had all the classes or seminars they signed up for.
That's cool.
And that was all on there beforehand. And a lot of people looked at it as like, oh, well, here's some VIP treatment or something. And so some people have suggested maybe instead of that, just go to different colored wristbands for, you know, whether or not you signed up for a class or a haunt tour or something like that. And so we're kind of tossing around that idea, which way to go with that. But, you know, making, you know, giving people prison numbers or inmate numbers would be pretty interesting idea for the theme.
You can even make up like haunt crimes, you know, in jail for being too scary or something.
Excessive making people pee.
Exactly. Excessive causal urination causing. Yeah, you could have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
So okay. Like I said, I did events in a previous life. Mm-hmm. Something happened. Something went wrong during the event.
Yeah.
There's a war story. What's the war story?
Can I preface this by saying,
I don't know, can you?
No, I can't. The convention was a great time.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Things did go wrong. It was Saturday morning, I think about 10 a.m. maybe. The fire alarm went off.
Oh, fun.
I'm walking.
That's a good one.
I'm walking through the cell block, and maybe I need to preface this a little bit more. The night before, the reformatory itself is still doing some guided tours Friday night. The Friday night was our setup day. Vendors were able to come Friday, set up, get their booths ready, all that kind of stuff. But Friday night, the reformatory was still doing guided tours. And several vendors said, like, well, how is our stuff going to be secured? So, you know, knowing that their stuff is secure is important to them, and I understand, and it's obvious. So, it was all locked up. The reformatory has 24-hour staffing. They're it's safe, and it was all locked up. The guided tours weren't going to go through that area. They were fine. But so anyhow, 10 a.m. the next morning, the fire alarm goes off, and in my mind, I'm thinking like, oh my God, what are we? What's happening? And one problem was that people weren't moving. They weren't leaving.
It's part of the show.
But the thing is that everybody, like, I when I'm in a room, I typically go around and I'm like, hey, I'm Maximus. Nice to meet you. And I like meeting people. So people are turning to me and they're like, what do we do? I'm like, you guys have been to school. You know what you do. But you leave. But there was a fear with that, because you know people are leaving. You don't want people to leave their merchandise unguarded or something like that.
Right.
But you could tell people did not want to leave. So I'm on the radio. I'm trying to figure out if this fire alarm's real. I mean, well, it's real, but it's like, do we really need to evacuate? Do we not? And then we start, you know, it's like, guys, we need to get out. Fire alarm's going and people are making their way out. Luckily, pretty quickly, we find out that, hey, it's fine. Some fog machine set it off. And
it's always the fog machine. This is like an unwritten rule of haunting. If the fire, if you got a phantom fire alarm, check where your fog machines are.
I will, and just a shout out to one of our sponsors, Professor Mysterious Fog Fluid. It was not them. A lot of people think it was them. It was not them. So I just wanted to make that clear. But that threw me off because, I mean, things weren't going bad. But I was busy. You know, we were setting a lot of stuff up. Oh, yeah. We were trying to get things going together. I'm dead tired from the day before because I don't work out. And I was setting up a ton of tables and chairs and helping moving props. I was exhausted. And at that point, I'm like, oh, my God, this can ruin everything. A fire alarm? Seriously? How long is this going to take? Yeah. You're dealing with customers, vendors. The reformatory has guided tours going at the same time. So it was just, wow. Luckily that part got fixed pretty quickly. And luckily having the radios helped out.
Okay. Yeah, and I've always described event planning and haunt running in general as lightly controlled chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, haunters are well prepared in their own way for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of ran with it, and this kind of ties back to the surprise question. What was I surprised at? One other thing that kind of went wrong. I don't know if it went wrong, but it was an inconvenience. We had a monster makeoff competition upstairs going, organized by Bob Turner of the Haunted Hydro, where people are coming and doing makeup with costumes and getting judged and all that kind of stuff. There was a power issue upstairs, so the competition was delayed. And because it was delayed, that was a space that was slated to be used as classes once the monster makeoff was done and cleared out. There were several classes that were supposed to happen there. Well, since it was delayed, about two or three classes had to get moved. And they got moved to a tent outside.
Hmm. Now, okay. So how did sounds, you let people who had signed up for the classes know that it was moved?
Well, we had staffing around, and people knew where the class was supposed to be. So they would come up and they would ask, like, okay, we're looking for the queue line acting class. And I would tell them it's outside at the tent area. This all sounds, you know, not good for them to have to go outside and do that. I mean, the outside, it was pretty sunny. It wasn't like terribly hot, but it was sunny. And making a class move into the tent area, but there was nothing else really we could do about it in that moment. There was no other space that was available for us to hold a class.
No.
So we had people directing them, and we tried to make announcements. We used the microphones that were being used for the monster makeoff competition. We said, you know, anybody who is here for the prop building class or the queue line acting class, you can go outside. Now, the thing I was surprised at was the instructors of the classes were so chill about this. They were like, you know what? These things happen, but we're still gonna make this work.
I might have spoken at a conference or two. They happen.
Yeah, they happen, and you know, and you get a lot of leniency with conferences that you know it's their first year.
Yeah. Don't do it again the second.
Don't do it again in 5 years. But
we don't get that grace for next year. But
not quite, but like I said, I've spoken at dozens of conferences in my day job. I can tell you some weird things that have happened in these conferences. I have been shuffled around. I had one time I had my session put up against the keynote.
Yeah.
Because they had to condense a 2-day conference into 1 day with no notice. Yeah, I've had stuff happen.
Yeah. You just roll with it.
Yeah, you roll with it. But the feedback from the classes were still great. You went outside. prop building class, they were having a good time, having some laughs. The queue line acting class, they were doing their, doing their games and their exercises, and people were having a good time. And the turnout for the classes were a lot better than we thought they would be too. So it was just, I was very thankful, and I was very surprised that, you know, people, when things kind of had to be moved around a bit, that they were cool about it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very nice. Mm-hmm. So, we're getting close to the end here. So what would you tell others that are considering about starting up a convention?
Well, I think Keith Newsom, who was in charge of organizing the classes, he put together, he brought in some great instructors for classes and seminars. He created, I think, a list of things that, you know, one has to consider when doing an event like this, like the importance of signage, you know, having clear, telling people where to go, because when you go to this building, it is not clear where you go. And we thought we had enough signs. We could have definitely have used more.
Yeah, you should have listened to our episode about things haunts forget. We just
I heard that episode, and we had signs. We just didn't. We could have used more.
I think I said take the number of signs you think you need and double it. I think was the exact line. It's like firewood rules.
I'm sorry, Jonathan. I'm
no, not... I know you couldn't be a time traveler and listen to the episode before it came out.
But you know, your guys' podcast gives a lot of great recommendations in that as well. Another thing was that on the website you have to spell things out clearly.
Like, oh God, yes.
Like for example, we had there was a ghost tour being offered, but the way the ghost tour was offered was that you had to arrive at a certain time, and that was how you got in. You could not be late for it. But people didn't seem to catch on to that somehow. So there was a few stragglers. And so we had to, you know, be like, hey, you know, we have these people that pay for this. They need to come in. But, you know, making things absolutely clear is very important.
Yeah.
From working with deadlines and people who don't understand them is always give a time a little before you actually want to start the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it gives time for those stragglers to show up.
Right. And if you are, if you're considering putting on a convention, one thing that I think may have been something that we've learned from this was that this happened more than I thought it should have. We had similar vendors near each other. And this kind of happened with the vendor application. When people applied, we showed them a map of all the booth spaces, and they sort of selected which ones they wanted. And what ended up happening was we had a couple of like weapons vendors close together. We had a couple of mask people close together, a couple of creepy doll people close together. So spreading them out might be a good idea. Or making sure that you don't have exact vendors right next, like close to each other like that. That was one thing that we took from this. But also the importance of a team. Having a great team that is reliable, that follows through on what they say they're going to do, and being enthusiastic about the work we're doing. That is so... I cannot thank the team that we had enough. Like, we had great leadership. We had people who took initiative. We had people who were organized. And it was just amazing, the team that got put together so quickly and followed through on everything. So the importance of team, the importance of volunteers. There's a lot to organizing these things, but keeping a cool head and communicating and sharing ideas, not getting into like power struggles, but you know, everybody being adults, that is huge. And I am so privileged to have been a part of this. And I thank, you know, Jason, Ryan, Kelly, Nikki, and Keith, Katie for, you know, being a part of this and for this happening. The feedback has been phenomenal, and we are beyond excited to do this again in 2020.
Yeah, it sounds like it went well, and like I said, you got some great advice. Conferences, events like this, they're a lot of work. Someone once told me, that putting an event together like this, no one task is that difficult. Like, every task is call this person, arrange this, and da-da-da-da-da. It's all easy stuff, but there's so much of it. It's insane. It's like polishing marbles, except you're trying to polish every marble that's filled the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm. And even on the day of, we discovered things that we may not have thought of before, but because of the great team we had, it just came together. It's like, okay, we'll take care of this.
And it sounds like the Ohio Haunters Association, having that in place for years to begin with and having that rapport with everyone really helped get this off the ground in a good way.
I would think so. It definitely, I think, established a pretty good foundation, because once Jason had the idea, based on people's involvement with the association, I think he knew who to contact pretty quickly in regards to, you know, I know who some reliable people are, and he also knew who to contact in regards to, you know, potential vendors, instructors, and all that kind of stuff. There was a great foundation there, and I think they will agree with me that, you know, we feel like a little haunt family now, that Ohio feels a little bit smaller now, luckily, because, you know, we can come together and do something like this. Yeah. And it's amazing that it happened. Like, it sometimes feels surreal that it did happen. And afterwards, I remember just being so exhausted from it, but it was a good exhausted. It was like we did this, and it happened, and it wasn't a disaster. In fact, I would label it as a success, and people seem excited about next year, and
what are the dates for the next year?
Yeah, when's it coming around?
So, the Ohio Halloween and Haunters Convention will be returning in 2020 to the Ohio State Reformatory, May 15th through the 17th.
Okay.
Nice. We're still putting together details as far as what, if there's going to be another haunt tour, the nights of different haunt tours. We're putting together the classes. We're already contacting vendors again. We're talking with the reformatory about the amount of space. Now, if you've ever seen the reformatory, there's a west and east cell block. And we only had one of those cell blocks. This year, we're talking about maybe getting the other one. And if that will allow more vendors, more things for customers to see. And with all the lessons we learned from this last year, we're hoping that this next one is a fantastic show that everybody enjoys, whether you are a vendor, an attendee, anything. That's the whole purpose of this happening. We want a party in Ohio. And that's why this convention mostly came together.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Well, Max, thank you so much for joining us. I think our time is just about up.
Yeah.
Greatly appreciate you dropping some knowledge bombs about getting a convention going. I think, and honestly, I think the idea of these localized conventions is just great.
Yeah.
Because I think there are issues of haunting that are unique to each region. Mm-hmm. Like, Ohio has 8 bajillion haunts. Like, I have no idea who hurt Ohio that they need so many haunted houses. Or that they get so many. But you look at it either way. But yeah, it's an absolutely insane number of haunts in that state. It's clearly got a strong haunting culture.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, different regions have different needs and different concerns. It makes perfect sense to have these types of regional, I guess you would say, conventions that are all the more national tours, so to speak. Because Midwest was always kind of a national, even though it said Midwest, it was always kind of a national thing in terms of how it was presented and how it was sort of held. So
I'm all for it. And, you know, that we've become friends with the Texas Haunters Convention people, and they're going to be happening here in later July. You know, if you're in the Texas area, check them out. And, you know, they're putting this on this year, and I think it's going to be great for them as well.
Say hi to Haley for me if she's still with them.
And if you're going to be there.
And they're going to be there, Yeah, freak her out a little bit. I'm just kidding. But no, it's been a lot of fun having you, Max. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you all.
So, yes, indeed. This has been Haunt Weekly episode. I forgot what episode number we're on. 189. It's 189. talking with Maximus Bryan, all about Braxton. We're a professional operation, I promise. I'm out of my browser. I don't have my usual notes.
Do you need me to go and, hit the fire alarm?
Yeah, apparently. He might help.
Say bye.
Bail us out. Beep, beep, beep. Oh, God. But yes, about starting a conference and some of the surprises and challenges he faced. You can find more Haunt Weekly stuff at hauntweekly.com or Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook. YouTube.com/Haunt Weekly is our YouTube channel. You can also find us at Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are distributed. I have no idea why they allow us right now.
Yeah, we will put links to
all of
OHA
and all that stuff in the description and show notes, which you'll find at hauntweekly.com. So you can click the links there very, very trivially. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And we will see you guys next week.